This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehisu Hib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the UN Human Rights Office warns rival governments and armed militias in Libya are in violation of international humanitarian and human rights laws, and their abusive actions threaten the stability of the country.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva. Details coming up.
Also in Kenya, the ruling party and opposition disagree over how to conduct fresh presidential elections set for next month. And Egypt has extended its fight against Islamic State from the Sinai to other parts of the country.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, 2 days of talks among members of Kenya's Electoral Commission, the ruling party and opposition have fallen apart amid disagreements over how to conduct fresh presidential elections set for next month. As Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi, there are fears Kenya is headed for a political and constitutional crisis.
The dispute centers in part on two proposed amendments to the electoral law ahead of the October 26 ballot. The ruling Jubilee Party wants the law changed so officials rely more on election results that are submitted via paper ballot, as opposed to those transmitted electronically. The second centres on mandating that the Kenyan Supreme Court order a recount if results are in dispute. The Kenyan Supreme Court struck down President Uhuru Kenyatta's August 8th electoral win, citing irregularities in the way the results were transmitted. The court said earlier this month that electronically transmitted results were neither transparent nor verifiable, as required by law. The opposition says the ruling party's attempt to push the proposed changes through in the National Assembly should not be done during an election season. They argued that such an effort will tie the hands of the Electoral Commissioner. In walking out of the discussions Thursday, the opposition said the talks did not address their issues nor those raised by the court. Senator James Orengo is a lawyer and member of the opposition.
We came here in good spirit and thinking that this consultative process was a good idea. And we were ready, we prepared our papers. We had a lot that the groundwork we have done. We have used the courts also to make sure that the law is clear. But it looks like this is an exercise in futility. And participation in these deliberations make no further sense.
The opposition also is demanding the resignation of members of the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, who are accused of bungling the August vote. Additionally, the opposition wants the government to cancel a contract with a Dubai-based firm, Al Ghurair Printing and Publishing, that printed the paper ballots used in the earlier election. The opposition alleges the company, which printed 1.2 million extra ballot papers, was part of a plan to rig the election. There was no response from the company. The IEBC says it is too late to make such changes. Its chairman, Wafula Chebukati, also says the commission hopes the proposed laws will not affect the agency's operations.
We don't need any more laws to give Kenyans an election on 26th of October. But if Parliament passes the laws, I've also said I hope those laws will not change the framework we have put in place, because if they do so, then they'll put us in a very precarious situation.
Despite the dispute, Senator and Deputy Speaker Kithure Kindiki says Parliament will go with its plan to amend the laws. He is calling on the opposition to participate.
If parliamentarians want to amend even the existing law, it's up to them. But what we are not going to allow is the convolution of agenda, where an agenda which is taking place in the legislature is used to forestall a consultative meeting which has been called by an election manager and which meeting doesn't have the mandate anyway to change anything. Change can only happen in the legislature where that bill is being discussed.
Opposition leader Raila Odinga has called on his supporters to take to the streets starting Monday for a rally over the electoral process. In 2016, a similar protest planned by the opposition turned deadly. After weeks of demonstrations, the Electoral Commission has resigned, paving the way for new officers. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Egypt says its air force attacked a 10-vehicle convoy carrying arms and ammunition near the Libyan border. Egypt has extended its fight against Islamic State from the Sinai to other parts of the country. Also today, an Islamic State militant suspected of taking part in the beheading of 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians in Libya 2 years ago has been arrested. The Associated Press quotes the chief prosecutor as saying the killings took place behind a hotel in Sirte, and the burial site of the victims has been found. ISIS videotaped the killings and posted it online.
The UN Human Rights Office warns rival governments and armed militias in Libya are in violation of international humanitarian and human rights laws, and their abusive actions threaten the stability of the country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva, where the report is under review.
The report makes for grim reading. 6 years after former Libyan dictator Muammar Gaddafi was toppled, it finds armed groups, including the internationally recognized Government of National Accord and the opposition Libyan National Army and its allies, are creating havoc in the country. UN Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights Kate Gilmore says these armed groups are committing widespread gross violations of human rights, including hostage-holding, torturing and killing men, women and children with impunity. She says they are operating outside any rule of law or system of accountability.
The people in Libya are quite simply sick and tired of this situation. Its impact is felt daily by children, women and men across the country. It is civilians who are being hurt, abducted, raped, tortured, and killed.
Gilmore says it is the people of Libya who are demanding decisive action to bring this dangerous situation to an end. But she adds nothing is being done. Violations and abuses continue unabated. She says criminal violence and impunity have worsened into a humanitarian crisis in parts of the country. She says increased disappearances, targeted killings and hostage taking of children, gender-based violence, and the detention of migrants under abysmal conditions in official and unofficial centers comprise today's reality in Libya.
The cases we have documented reveal a fundamental lack of protection for civilians in Libya and starkly illustrate the desperate situation of people in the most vulnerable settings, all of whom have little or no recourse to redress.
The UN is calling for perpetrators who have committed criminal actions to be brought before the International Criminal Court. Gilmore notes the rampant impunity afflicting the people of Libya is destroying the lives of people today. At the same time, she says, it is eroding prospects for peace tomorrow. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Meanwhile, one of Libya's rival governments is expressing its displeasure with President Trump's new travel ban. The government, based in the east, has decided to bar American citizens from entering Libya. The new U.S. travel ban takes effect in October 18th, something the eastern government describes as a dangerous escalation. Besides Libya, the ban suspends immigration visas for Chad, Iran, North Korea, Syria, Yemen, and Somalia.
An independent expert has told the UN Human Rights Commission that Somalia has made significant progress in the human rights situation, but Bahama Nyadunga says natural and man-made factors continue to have negative impacts, particularly the attacks by al-Shabaab and the fighting between clan militias, which have caused civilian casualties. He says drought and insecurity are behind an increase in internal displacement. Drought has affected more than half of Somalia's populated and decimated 60% of the livestock. Nyadunga adds that Somali women played a major role in the electoral process and have increased their representation in parliament from 38 to 67 members. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. With Yehia Swahib, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. In northeastern Nigeria, Boko Haram militants reportedly have attacked a town and two villages, killing three people and burning about 150 homes. AFP reports the attacks occurred yesterday afternoon in Gorum, Lingus, and Ajadari in Borno State. The militants, traveling in trucks and on motorcycles, also looted food stores before setting them ablaze. There are several factions of Boko Haram. AFP says such hit-and-run raids are often conducted by the faction led by Abubakar Shekau.
Nigeria terror group Boko Haram is on the run. That's the view of Nigerian Information Minister Lai Mohammed. He told reporters in London that they have been driven from 24 out of 25 local government areas. And he says the group, which was active in 24 states, is now confined to Adiwawa and Borno states. The government is also increasing efforts to reach young people, especially girls, tempted to join Boko Haram.
When you are fighting an insurgency, you are fighting not irregular war. When you have degraded such an insurgency, they resort to attack on soft targets. Now, what we need to do is more of intelligence gathering and sharing and analysis. More particularly, we need a program of de-radicalization, which is already going on. It's the only de-radicalization that will ensure that young girls, parents do not donate their children as explosive vehicles or vehicles for explosives. Again, we must appreciate the fact that we're dealing with a region that has a very low literacy level. So we must also intensify the rebuilding of schools and girls' education in that area.
The government is also reaching out to youths in the southeast. Many are attracted to a liberation movement called the Indigenous People of Biafra, or IPOB. The Southeast Governors Forum recently announced efforts to rehabilitate and empower young people who may be tempted to join IPOB with the government's calls a terrorist group. Nigeria's information minister said the government is willing to engage in talks with ethnic pressure groups that do not threaten violence, like MOSOP, which advocates for the Ogoni people. But he says IPOB is different.
IPOB is not about self-determination of Biafra. IPOB is clearly a terrorist organization. We have had MOSOP that has been around for more than 10 years, also asking for actualization of Biafra. But as long as the demands are made within the confines of the law, the federal government will not stifle the expression of freedom or proscribe them. But when an organization openly solicits for arms, an organization sets up its own military organization, it attacks, kills policemen, attacks the army, sets up roadblocks and extorts money, that organization has crossed the line. On that situation with IPOB, IPOB has gone out not only to oppose this for arms, but says that they don't even want Biafra by negotiation, they want Biafra by violence, and that if Biafra is not given to them, what happens in Somalia will be like a paradise.
Lai Mohammed said the government has made progress in two other areas, treating refugees and the displaced in the northeast, and on quelling a cholera epidemic in different parts of the country. He said medical supplies and fresh water have been rushed to areas stricken with cholera, which he called a seasonal problem and the result of overcrowding. He said the government is trying to care for thousands of people who have been released from captivity by Boko Haram, but he called for support from partners because the fighting affects all of the Chad Basin.
Business activity has come to a standstill as Cameroon has sealed its northern border with the troubled Central African Republic following escalating violence in the neighboring country. Cameroon says several of its citizens have been kidnapped and taken to CAR by armed groups. Moki Edwin Kenzika reports from Mayo Ray in northern Cameroon.
Oh, Hundreds of villagers in the Cameroon northern town of Mayore celebrate the return home of three traders captured by armed groups from their town 2 weeks ago. They were taken across the border to the Central African Republic and their families asked to pay $10,000 each for the hostages to be released. Among the crowd is 25-year-old Julie Nelem, whose uncle was kidnapped. She says she is very happy her uncle has returned and she will continue to have money to fund her studies. She says she is very happy because her uncle is home and alive. She says it is as if he died and has been resurrected. The three former captives were freed by the Cameroon military after 2 days of crossfire battles with rebels along the border. The most senior government official in the Cameroon border locality, Etienne Balasamba, says several Cameroonians in his area have been kidnapped since violence escalated across the border 2 weeks ago. He says more troops have been deployed to stop the rebels.
Nous avons dû tout à fait à contre-cœur fermer la frontière pour éviter que.
He says the government of Cameroon has decided to seal its northern border with the Central African Republic to stop armed rebel groups from causing disorder. He says preserving lives is better than the negative economic consequences the closure will bring. Etienne says the rebels are from the eastern province of Haute-Côte, where there have been clashes between armed groups since June. Cameroon supplies most consumer goods and food to troubled CAR, and the border closure has stopped business activity. There are fears food shortages in CAR will increase in the days ahead if the border remains closed. The United Nations reports that since May 2017, fresh fighting between armed groups in CAR has wrought new waves of destruction, bloodshed, and displacement. Last year, 11 Cameroonians, including Mama Abakai, mayor of the northern town of Lagdo, were freed from captivity after they were seized by a rebel group from the Central African Republic in 2015. Last month, Cameroon handed over to CAR war weapons they had seized from rebels hiding in Cameroon. Armed groups from the CAR regularly cross into Cameroon to kidnap cattle ranchers and businessmen for ransom or to steal their possessions. Cameroon shares a 900-kilometer boundary with the Central African Republic and hosts 300,000 refugees from the neighboring country. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Mayore, Northern Cameroon.
Zimbabwe's president, Robert Mugabe, is lashing out against businesses that he believes are defying his orders to reverse price hikes for basic commodities. Mugabe is accusing those who defy his order of being saboteurs against his government. Some, he said, were from within his ruling ZANU-PF party, and he promised to take corrective measures. As Sebastian Mumfu reports from Harare, some analysts are calling for the government to stabilize the economy rather than blame businesses.
The past 2 weeks have seen a wave of panic buying as Zimbabweans react to reports on social media that shortages similar to those of 2008 are returning. The reports of price hikes prompted a strong response from President Robert Mugabe on his return this week from the UN General Assembly. He says, these are the issues that we do not understand, but we have the knowledge that there are saboteurs who would want things to go wrong so that people can revolt against the government in our absence. Anyway, I'm back and I will look at it. I do not think these are shortages that can fail to be addressed in 1 day or two. Those shortages, we'll examine them and find a solution. More than 2 days have passed and the price hikes are worsening, prompting sharp criticism from former finance minister and opposition leader Tendai Biti. He says structural economic reforms are what is needed.
The old man suffers from a reality distorted field. There is a structural crisis in the economy. But we are not producing foreign currency. Therefore, the little foreign currency, the price has shot up. The exchange rate between the bond note and the US dollar, I think, is 40%. The cost of money has shot up. So these retailers must increase their prices. These retailers, particularly the fewer ones, must refuse RTGS and bond note payments. They are doing. Because when they import from Dubai, from Kuwait, they need foreign currency. So chickens have come home to roost. As I keep on saying, you can rig an election, but you can't rig an economy.
Last year, Zimbabwe introduced what it calls bond notes, a surrogate currency that officially trade at par with the US dollar. But lately, businesses have been asking for more if customers pay with them. There is another price for paying using bankers and another one when a customer makes a bank transfer. Wednesday, Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa said the four-tier price system and price hikes would end soon, warning that authorities will arrest those who overcharge. But economist Prosper Chitambara of the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Southern Africa thinks other measures are necessary.
Definitely, we are in a crisis of confidence. A number of companies are having to go to the black market or the parallel markets to source for foreign currency, to buy critical inputs from outside the country. For me, the bond notes were never a solution. I think they were just probably a stopgap measure. But they actually have created, I think, even more problems now. This parallel market, I think it's really the cause of the recent hike in prices that we've actually seen. The best solution is to involve everyone, to bring everyone on board. I think this idea of making threats or even threatening to reintroduce price controls will actually not work.
While fuel shortages have somewhat eased since the beginning of the week, cash shortages and price hikes have not shown any sign of warning. The hikes prompted prominent pastor Ivan Mawarire to call on Zimbabweans to protest before he was arrested and accused of subversion. Zimbabwe's magistrate court had the charges dropped and was released on Tuesday. But Zimbabwe's economic problems seem to be far from easing. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
A new fund to help victims of sexual abuse and exploitation by UN peacekeepers has grown to $1.5 million. The Associated Press says 10 more countries have contributed to the trust fund, raising the amount from $500,000. The UN Department of Field Support says the contributions reinforce the Secretary General's clear commitment to putting the rights and dignity of victims first. A year-long investigation by AP reported some 2,000 allegations is sexual misconduct by UN peacekeepers since 2004. About 700 of them were in the DRC.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Cornelius Tenor, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
The best footballers must have dedication and teamwork. And to end malaria, we need this same unity. Join with leaders like President Sirleaf.
Malaria stops footballers from scoring and students from learning.
And join with footballer Didier Drogba.
Malaria is preventable and treatable.
United, we can beat malaria.